You're listening to WPRK 91.5, the voice of Rollins College and the best of basement radio. Hear ye, Winter Park, Florida. Today we're discussing the secrets of the fairies with Dr. Charlotte Tronquet.
Hello.
And her husband, Benny Balak.
Hey.
Daughter, Talia Balak.
Hello.
Child expert on all things fairy tales.
Among other things.
Among many other things. And our special guest today is Juliana Rohrbeck.
Hello.
Today's discussion will be about Beauty and the Beast, and let's get started. Why don't you talk first about the origins and the skeleton of the story?
Oh my god, the origins are multiple. In fact, this skeleton of the story is probably the biggest used skeleton in stories. You know, like the young girl married with a horrible beast or monster, or it's probably 50% of story.
That's quite relevant.
Fairy tales, especially.
Are you looking at me?
Then he is the beast.
No, actually, I got lucky.
Oh.
I got married with a young, cute guy, but no, not
turned
everybody
into a beast.
Does.
Okay, I'll stop airing the laundry.
Too early.
So, yeah, we really go back to the Greeks, to that. You know, there are two elements, and there is the girl being married to a beast, and the beast is not really a beast because all men are beasts or pigs or wild boars.
Mm-hmm.
And but in fact, it's just the surface, and inside themselves, they are so sweet and nice and stuff like that. So once you can pass that and see the niceness of a man, then they transform into a prince.
Can I replay that?
Yep.
Repeat.
Instant repeat. Instant replay.
So that's basically the model of the story Beauty and the Beast. And then you also have, and that's more in the Disney version actually than in the original version of Beauty and the Beast. Well, not the original written for children or young ladies, which is the story from Le Prince de Beaumont in, she's a lady, Madame Le Prince de Beaumont.
Wait, was this a ploy to get young, beautiful women to marry the old beastly men?
I think to accept their arranged marriages.
Really, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now, actually, her story is a little better than that. But yeah, there are a lot of stories that are about exactly that, you know, how to marry the horrible guy.
How to get your daughter to marry the horrible guy.
Maybe if you're good and virtuous and nice, he's going to transform into something cool at some point in your life.
What'd you say was
the idea?
The three P's of being a lady.
Oh, the pretty, polite, and passive.
Pretty, polite, and passive.
Well, I mean, in the Beauty and the Beast of Madame Le Prince de Beaumont, so again, it's 1756, I think. She's not very passive. I mean, she takes the place of her father, you know, to go to her death. And
yeah, but she's not sexually attracted to the beast. I mean, it's a pretty passive way to marry someone.
No, she's not sexually attracted to anybody, actually.
But sexual attraction and marriage is a modern concept.
Good point.
Except for the peasants, you know me with my medieval, you know? Yeah, the only people in time who married for sex, for love, were peasants. The aristocracy, the princesses, were sold off to some dirty old man.
And the dirty old man, I'm sure, had sex with plenty of other women.
Well, it was rather accepted. I mean, I don't know if you want to go there, but I mean, you hear about all these, everybody has affairs, and it's totally accepted because, well, I mean, you know, it's good for harmony, right? Social harmony. It was viewed that the fact that affairs are totally tolerated and out of wedlock babies and all that, that they were generating at such, because they had miserable marriages. So each one had their boyfriends and girlfriends, etc. And it was accepted because otherwise they'd go crazy and slaughter each other probably eventually.
In one of the previous stories from the 17th century written by Madame d'Aulnoy, which is really the same theme, you know, of a young girl having to marry a beast. In that case, it's a wild boar.
It makes a whole new meaning of men are pigs.
Yeah, because there are three fairies that fly over a woman when she's asleep and one gives her lots of good things, the other gives her, you know, like happiness and everything, and the third one says that she's gonna have a baby, which she was longing for, and the baby is gonna be born as a wild boar until he takes three wives. This is actually the original written stories from 1550 from Stravarola, this Venetian.
Well, he's not Venetian, but he wrote in Venice.
Published in Venice, anyway. So anyway, at some point, you know, the prince, the pig prince or the boar prince.
I think you're having too much fun with this.
this is really. I mean, this is a big part of fairy tales. This theme. So anyway, he asks for a first wife and. He gets her, but she kills herself and her lover, you know, in the antechamber before the wedding night. And so he asks again, because he has to marry three wives. He doesn't even know why. He just needs to ask, like it's something he has to do. And the second one, he marries the second one, the mom is kind of not happy with it. And, you know, because it's already caused two deaths. And there is a whole discussion between the son and the mother, and the mom says, well, because he says, well, who's going to marry a beast like me, you know? And the girl he wants to marry is an aristocrat, but not a duke or a princess. So basically, they should not be married. You know, it's like she's from a lower rank of aristocracy. So the mom is like, so the guy is like, well, whose princess or royal person is going to marry somebody so ugly as I am? And she replies, well, you know, princesses don't have as much liberty as other people have. In fact, all we need is to send a portrait of you looking a little better than you are. And so, you know, they are going to be okay. As long as we have their okay, they are here. There is nothing they can do anymore. Just to tell you how...
False advertising.
Nice. and there is kind of the same story in Henry VIII, right? He's when he married Anne de Cleves, Anne of Cleves. No, Henry VIII.
Yeah, she was the fourth wife.
The fourth wife, okay.
He
marries her, they did exactly the same thing. They sent a beautiful portrait, her. And when she arrived, it was like, okay,
disgusting.
No way, I just cannot do it. And they never consummated the marriage until later, actually. Until the marriage was revocated.
Or
so
did
it's,
they?
It, you know, it's a very common thing, I guess, in early modern aristocracy to get married with a beast, whether the lady is a beast or the man is a beast. So it's not out of standard that there are so many fairy tales that take this theme, you know, the marriage between one person and one beast, one animal. So, you know, it's like even before... Before Darwinism, you know, people are animals. The aristocracy actually knew that.
Some natural selection.
Yeah, we can go all about that. I mean, Darwin just tweaked evolution. Semi-rational people knew that there was change in evolution in the universe. You know, this whole notion of young Earth evolution, you know, the fact that it exists... It's more popular today than in the Middle Ages, basically. And people knew that things changed, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's an old time. Evolution is weird. Not the science, the attitudes towards it.
Oh, yeah.
The science is, you know.
So actually, before we talk about the Disney version, do you guys, my guest, Juliana, and my daughter, Talia, which are the specialists of this fairy tale today, do you want to... tell people about, you know, the Madame le Prince de Beaumont's version and how different it is from Disney?
Yes, there is a total hunger fetish, which is quite disturbing.
And you start to notice over the course of the story that the father has multiple identities, both as a, you know, a merchant, his trade, and then for most of the story, as the Beast is referenced, he's just called a good man. So you've kind of forgotten that he's Beauty's father, or Belle's father, you know, and he's just known simply as a man. And there's a complete sexual connotation to that. But as soon as he finds the castle, suddenly he's starving. Suddenly the horse is starving. And only Beauty thinks that she's going to be eaten by the Beast. No one else before she, you know, we see a little aside mentally.
I didn't notice that reading it. That's a really astute observation that, in fact, she's the only person who considered that she would be eaten by the Beast.
Devoured. Yeah.
Ooh la la.
Yeah, and then you consider the second adjective used to describe the father is a sensible man. And then by the, in the middle of the story, the Beast is finally described as having good sense. And when you remember that there's no mother present in the story, you have to think, did the father, you know, was he previously, like, you know, Tonkei said, a beast, and then, you know, metamorphosed into this, you know, father figure with his children, and did he devour his wife? You know, you start to wonder things like that.
That's interesting.
That is an interesting perspective. Talia, what do you think about that? When we read the story last night, did any of those thoughts come to mind, or did you have a different perspective?
No, never.
We mostly talked about, what was it? There was something that was said in there. Do you know which quote I'm talking about?
I think.
It's about fools, remember?
Oh, yes. Yes, now I remember that. That was really difficult. I loved that.
I love that part, too.
About what?
It's about how the Beast calls himself unintelligent.
Oh, yeah.
And she said,
okay. A stupid person doesn't realize that he lacks intelligence, Beauty replied. Fools never know what they're missing.
Fools never know what they're missing. I dedicate that to every guy who's ever dumped me.
Cheap shot.
You know who you are.
There is a whole thing about that. You know, the two sisters, they get married. One get married with this very beautiful person, but he's so beautiful that he's so full of himself that he only takes care of himself and completely lets his wife down. And the second sister marries this super witty guy that is so witty that he makes everybody look dumb.
Including her. Yeah.
Including her. Uh-huh. So basically they are both very unhappily married. And the Beast constantly says to Belle, which is her name in the story, I am
her name's
ugly
Beauty in the story,
and I'm stupid. You know, I don't have the wit and stuff. And it's at the end she has to realize that the inside, you know, the inner person,
the kindness
is more important than beauty. Good. Or beauty or wit, and that's why he can transform back into actually a witty, intelligent, witty, beautiful, and kind and virtuous prince.
Well, I think it's ironic, too, that the main point of the story is to value virtue over beauty and intelligence, when in fact her name is Beauty and she's intelligent and well-read. It's almost like this name has become a burden. I know that in her family, her two sisters are extremely jealous of her. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's ironic that being named Beauty and being such an intelligent woman that she was, she realized that her namesake was actually, that there's more.
Is this like this is off, you know, the side. Just an idea popped into my head as I'm listening to all this stuff. Is this a little bit like a male version, you could say, of Little Red Riding Hood? Here it's for the father, you know? It's the fathers that are screwing up, you know? Mm-hmm. Like the grandmother and the mother not taking care of the girl. I mean, you know...
Oh, yeah.
Hope you all read Charlotte's outstanding article.
It's actually the first chapter of,
check out our Facebook page.
Of a book that will come one day. Yeah, check out Facebook page. And if you are one of the pure, the honorable, who do not use the F page, why? I wish I was, man. I mean, but anyway. Sorry, yeah, I got major issues. But anyway, let's give a shout out to a new little magazine starting. They're looking for interesting things to, and so far, you know, we've been working a little bit with, and that's the East Orlando Post.
Yay!
Oh.
Who's published it, and we linked up to it in Central. Yeah. Now to Jacob Engels.
Thank you so much.
Mommy, in the picture in the story, it's Beauty leaning over the Beast, who looks just like a boar, by the way.
Yes, exactly.
He looks just like a boar. And so she's in a beautiful, lavish dress, and she's all pretty, but her nose is way too pointy. Anyway, she's leaning over him, and in the background, there's a monkey dressed in clothes. Do you have any idea what that is?
It's one of the servants.
In fact,
he's a monkey.
This picture really doesn't belong to Beauty and the Beast. I know it was. I'll put it on the Facebook page for everybody to see. It was it's an illustration from Walter Crane in 1875, and
so what was that? 100 years later? When was this?
Yeah, this like was published. Yeah, 20. Okay. Yeah, it really should have been a picture of Madame d'Aulnoy's numerous fairy tale on the theme of the Beauty and the Beast, because there is, in her stories, okay, there is the wild boar I was talking about, and this is totally like a wild boar. And there is also another story in which the beast is actually a princess, and she is transformed into a monkey, as you know, at birth. So she's the mother. Okay, so now, you know, there is another very interesting thing about all those beasts and stuff. In the 16th and 17th century, the doctors, which were really like beginning to Tortures. Understand anything about medicine.
Yeah, barely.
Seriously,
I mean, statistically, they were still not curing at all. They were killing more than they were curing. Shockingly, it's actually during the World Wars where modern Western medicine first, statistically, starts to show.
Cue the psycho music.
It's kind of shocking, you know. I think.
So they were just hacking bodies at that point.
But they were beginning to try and, not literally do silliness, but try and figure things out. Exactly, hacking bodies.
You know how it is. You got to break a few eggs to make an omelet.
True that. It says that the knowledge was already there for many, many centuries. It's just that we kind of...
They all burned that knowledge.
We burned them all and then had to figure it all out from the start.
Yeah. What a waste.
Back to medicine in the 16th and 17th century. The doctors, you know, there were a super big interest into women putting to birth. How do you say that? Boring?
Giving birth.
Thank you. Giving birth to animals like dogs and stuff like that.
That's not normal.
No, it was a very recognized actually the specialist of that section is Susan Magnanini, and she works in she's a scholar, Italian scholar in Colorado, and she wrote a book about that. At least one chapter of her book is about that. It's absolutely fascinating how, you know, and they were like, she totally gave birth to a dog.
But they were affirming to deformation and then calling it a name?
A dog?
You see what I'm saying?
For a deformation? No, they were really thinking that people were women, some women, cursed women and stuff, were actually giving birth to animals.
I mean, given that obviously that nothing remotely similar to that ever could have happened,
yeah.
I'm kind of thinking, are like ex-witches like playing a prank on them and producing a dog and saying, oh, look what came out of her?
Well, it just reminds me of the
probably.
End of,
you know what's going on here? It's kind of weird.
It is very weird. But then you have a lot of fairy tale stories that you think are very weird, but in fact, they are not that weird for many reasons, especially for social reasons, but also for medical reasons, because the doctors also thought that, yes, that happened actually. There were numerous cases they were investigating.
Yep.
Yeah, while they were killing witches on the side.
Right. Well, the way we add our attitude towards science today and expertise, get used to going back there, you know. And I got to tell you, I read the news often. It sounds to me not much different than reporting about a woman gave birth to a squirrel from left nostril, you know, the New York Times.
In Winter Park, okay. I wouldn't even be surprised.
That's just me.
Didn't that happen in Greek gods or something like that, where you had...
Everyone was born weird things. Aphrodite came out of this big old shell in the sea, and like what Athena sprang.
That's a real, by the way, dirty story if you want to talk about Aphrodite.
Yeah.
What Aphros means and. Yeah, well, maybe not for a morning show, that one.
Yeah, people are still
But the Greeks knew it was stories, you know? They knew it was stories. It was myths, you know? They didn't really take it literally. I mean, just like the Hebrews in the Bronze Age in the days of the Bible, they were reading that stuff. They knew it was poetry. I mean, they understood that.
It wasn't all about virtue and being educational. It was, you know, storytelling.
Or at least the interpretation of these myths were clearly, of course, we know that she's not marrying, in our context, a wild boar dressed in clothes, you know? I mean, we're not stupid. We know that wild boars don't talk.
Mm-hmm.
But we can represent a human as a wild boar. You see, I mean, and all the old text, the whole idea of literal writing, it's like, when is this? You're more of a, it's 17th century, roughly. First time people told the story like it is. And if 16th. It said it, they expect you to believe that, well, that actually happened.
Right, I think that actually. This, yeah,
Nowhere.
16th century.
Everything else was symbolic. People knew that the author has the right to fantasize and say,
well, yeah, this story definitely walks the line. I mean, there's this phantom figure who magically transporting, what, a trunk of gold. And
can promise her anything she desires.
And it dresses, magical rings. They don't actually...
wedding rings.
Make there was this, a fairy in this.
Yeah,
in
there is a fairy behind all that.
Yeah, there's a fairy.
Beaumont, there was a fairy in it, and she comes at the end. She's a fairy from Beauty's dreams. And then at the end, she actually comes and turns her sisters into statues.
Oh. Stone statues at the entrance of the palace.
They're forced to watch her happiness. Mm-hmm. And when they understand the mistake they made...
And get over their envy, they would...
Yeah.
They could change, but it's like the super big... I guess if there's a moral, and this would be the only thing. It's pride, anger, gluttony, and laziness can all be corrected, but some sort of miracle is needed to convert a wicked and envious heart. Yeah, that was the whole, ooh, you're statues now. Good luck with that.
So you see, that's something that the women in 17th century would never have said, the word miracle. In 17th century, the fairy tales were completely separated from religion. And miracle is a religious word, so they would never have said, oh, you need a miracle. So you can start seeing the switch, basically, between this adult literature that was written for adults in 17th century into this literature that is actually written to educate children, and in her case, young girls, because Le Prince de Beaumont was a French nanny, nurse, or not, how do you say, like, a tutor?
Governess,
thank you. To very well put off British girls in London for years, and she wrote that book for them to educate them. So this is the first real time, says Louis Cypher, that and Jack Zipes, that this is the first real account of. Bourgeoisie literature written for young adults, not children's yet.
Do you think
not
that might be
yet.
Why she mentioned the word miracle? Were these children who were reading the story aware of...
Yeah, they really had to be brought up in good faith and stuff.
Well, like,
so.
God's brought up twice. Like, Belle begs God for protection right after her dad leaves.
And mercy so that she will go to heaven. And then...
That's true,
Dad,
yeah.
At one point, good he point, says, oh, thank God, for I thought I would...
Yeah, thank God for sending his help when he sees the castle. But when he gets to the castle, it's like God's kind of thrown under the bus or something, and he starts thanking some good fairy, you know, instead of...
Well, yeah. So there is a mix of the two that would never happen in the 17th century.
Wow.
They were really... If they referred to God, they would refer to gods. You know, the gods.
Yeah.
Because they were heavily taken from Greek and Roman mythology to start with. But okay, so there is a second component to this story that is especially shown in Disney and not so much in that version. But it's shown in a lot of beast husband beast husband beasts versions of the 17th
husband beast 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 husband is easy.
In the 17th century,
should we exit the booth just in case it goes rampant or something?
Oh no, man, I'm perfectly. I'm a card carrying militant feminist. I'm perfectly, perfectly happy in a cloud of estrogen. You
know? I love that.
Yay.
What was I saying? Beast's husband stories. Okay, there is another component of that which comes partly from the story of Psyche and Cupid, you know, when, you know the story? No. Who knows the story? Psyche. She's not supposed to watch. Maybe, yeah. She's not supposed to watch her husband when he is like a man, and she turns around and watches him, so she loses him. And then?
What's the point of that? What's the point of the story?
Well, that's the thing. That's the curiosity. You're not supposed to be curious. If you're a girl, just control yourself. And there is a lot of stories. With my class, we just studied the story of Blue Beard. I don't know if anybody ever heard about it. There is this guy with a blue beard. He has a big castle. He wants a wife. But we don't know what happened to his previous wives. So he gets a girl finally, and he marries her, and he leaves the castle.
And tells her that she can go everywhere except for the room that the tiniest key goes.
Yeah, exactly. For the he gives her the castle keys, and he says to her, "You can go everywhere, but that little room."
Yeah, that's
okay.
Room, I see where this is going.
And he describes exactly where the room at the bottom of the stairs from the after, you
don't
know, this aisle, and, you know, and this is the key for it, like the golden key. Or every other key is normal, like a.
I think he wants.
You know, absolutely. There's a pretty decent sized castle too. It's in St. Thomas.
Makes life more exciting. Yeah.
You need to speak up.
Yeah.
Oh, they heard me.
Okay. What did you say?
I said that it's a pretty decent sized castle. It's in St. Thomas, Virgin Islands. Bluebeard.
For real?
Bluebeard's castle, yeah.
Hmm. I mean, it's in the I was just wondering. Even Urban Dictionary has a good the definition of bluebird. I mean, bluebeard.
Bluebeard.
Okay, that's another.
That's actually another story.
A player, right? But Genesis, by the way. All right, remember?
No.
Don't eat the fruit.
Oh, yeah.
Don't eat it. It's kind of an entrapment. It's kind of supposed to be.
Yeah.
Accept authority. Obviously, you want to know, but it's not for you to know. You know, accept authority, bow your head. And
yeah, exactly.
It's not a story until they transgress that.
Yeah, so obviously the girl, the new wife, you know, first thing she does is going into that room. Mm-hmm. And
she finds the bodies of all the different women with their heads cut off.
Yeah, of all these other wives are basically hanging off the wall and in a pool of water. And she's so shocked, she drops the key. And the key is fairy, so she can never clean it up from the blood. And that's how he knows that she went to that room, transgressed the authority. Mm-hmm. And she has to die. But then her brothers, coming from God knows where, the sister
the
is
brothers
on
were
top
supposed
of the
to visit
tower.
That day.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's weird. You know, there is this sister on top of the tower.
But she does escape punishment.
So anyway, finally he gets killed.
Because Eve doesn't, right? Escape punishment. I mean, it's
she does escape punishment.
And anybody today, too, in most parts of the world, certainly that part of the world, I mean, I think that would, you know, the Garden of Eden, Genesis myth there would have been kind of obvious to them, potentially.
She must have had a good lawyer, huh?
I guess, yeah.
Very.
Or a good brother.
Does this chicken
good
bluebeard really
with
have
big
a choice, though?
In
I
that
think
case.
It sounds like she's going to get eaten either way. Or, I mean, not eaten. I'm thinking Beauty and the Beast still. It sounds like she's going to get screwed over either way. Like, oh, yeah, don't go in this room. But considering I've killed all these other women, I'm probably going to kill you. And then, you know, she definitely has to die because she's finally done something that warrants dying in this twisted logic.
Is the implication that if you go into the room against his authority, you will be decapitated in the room? Or is it just, like, he's going to kill you anyways?
I think it's worth dying if you transgress authority first.
No, he would not have killed her if she didn't transgress the order.
Okay, and this relates to Beauty and the Beast because when we're looking at Disney, obviously she went into the West Wing, discovered the rose,
right?
Blah blah blah.
Exactly, which
she
doesn't exist in
was.
The original text.
Right, but there is a red rose in the story of Bluebeard, no?
No.
No. Okay.
There is the rose appears in Le Prince de Beaumont's story. That's what Belle asks her dad to bring her back from town when he goes to town to get his shipment, and realizes when he gets there that his creditors have gotten all the shipment before him. So he comes back even poorer back home, and he brings her a rose, and he doesn't bring anything to the sisters because they wanted pearls and jewels and stuff.
And in fact, it was the rose that he picked from the beast's garden, which sealed the fate.
But it was one rose. Because, I'm sorry, but
yeah, but
not
he
that
said
bad.
That you could have taken everything. You've been served, you know, like a prince. You could have taken anything, but the roses, because they are my favorite thing in the world.
Because that was clearly, labeled.
For that, you need to die.
One
for stealing
rose.
My rose.
Yeah, sadly, for things aren't labeled.
One rose.
World, right?
Now I'm gonna kill you.
Money
your
doesn't grow on trees, but roses do.
I hate your chocolate.
You know, it's kind of like
rose is the problem.
Right.
So yeah, we go back to Genesis. You know, picking up the forbidden flower.
Yeah. You're kind of damned if you do.
This time,
if you don't.
Yeah, exactly.
I
mean, this time it's the guy.
Scene. I mean, it's a big Western notions.
Yeah.
Excuse me for all the rest, the majority of the planet who use these things as a little bit strange.
What?
I like, kind of, you know me with my real internationalism. I remember that the Western civilization is a minority, and there's a whole world out there that don't see this insane dualism and original sin and all that stuff. They look at us sideways. The vast majority of Asians, for example, look at us funny, you know. And they're right. Yeah, I agree. But what's the difference then? I mean, so what happened? You know, I always like, that's kind of really the key, I think, the main drive of much of your work. I mean, how did the social message really change from the originals to the Disney?
What right, the context.
Disney, I'm not nothing personal, it's just what we typically all know today.
Yeah, Disney. Why don't we go ahead and discuss Disney after we cut to a song?
Oh,
let some
okay.
of this.
Okay.
Brain breakfast digest for our listeners. Some food for thought. And when we come back, we'll be discussing Disney.
I guess not.
No, we're not.
No?
Yeah,
we're still on the air?
No, so, well, we can keep, you know.
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, let's just go for it.
All right.
Yeah,
well,
let's go.
Something kind of anticlimactic that Disney totally picked up on was at the very end, after the Beast transforms, it's gone from poor Beast to dear Beast, just because she suddenly found some value in him. It's funny how she flip-flops. And he's even in the friend zone at one point. I'll always be your friend. Try to be content with that. You know? Like, that's pretty modern, but really...
That's the Beast to Belle.
No, that's Belle
that's
to
Belle
the Beast.
To the Beast. Yeah, friend zone. Can't we just be friends? Yeah, that sort of thing. But after he transforms, the prince is only listed as handsome. That's his only adjective. And so even though they're talking about, oh, yeah, handsomeness is not important, brains aren't important, but that's the only adjective he gets is handsome. So
One thing about the Disney movie is that in the movie, he's not handsome. When he turns back into a guy, he's so ugly, it's not even funny.
But she totally checks him out the whole time. She, like, moves his hair and everything, you know.
I mean, it's a cartoon, so it's kind of hard to say if he's attractive or not.
You
could
have at least drawn him.
He's got blonde hair and blue eyes.
He looks like a prototype of Tarzan.
His eyes are, like, almost closer to his ears than to his eyes. Than to his nose. And
Sheesh.
His nose is like so down, it's like almost at its
Talia,
cheek.
You're gonna grow up to be a heartbreaker, aren't you?
Man-eater, goodness.
It sounds like the vegetarian vampire. I'm traumatized by my kids because every time we see like a commercial for that thing, I mean, they almost go, you know, crazy. It's like the anathema in our family.
It's hilarious.
Good word. Anathema.
Yeah. Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah,
so we're ready to go to a stopping point, and when we come back, we'll be discussing more about Disney.
All right.
It's such a lovely day to have to always feel this way, and the town that I was so friendless is when I never have to wait. Wandering stars. The blackness, the darkness forever.
To 91.5 WPRK Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College and the best in basement radio. Continuing on with our discussion, Secrets of the Fairies, Beauty and the Beast edition, this Wednesday morning. And we left off with Disney, so let's get back on track with that one. Who wants to go first, Juliana? Why don't you discuss a little bit about what we were discussing during the song?
Oh, okay. So basically, if you were to sum up the story in one word...
And the hunger fetish.
This is from the book, though, right? You're discussing it from the book.
We're starting with the book, and then we're going to see how it transitions.
The book being the original...
The 16th century.
Yeah. No, 18th
century. Or 18th.
And then not the original, because somebody else wrote a much longer version, Madame de Villeneuve, in 20 years before Le Prince de Beaumont took that story. And
got it.
So. All right. So basically, if you were to sum it up in one very brief sentence, you could say, in giving away his daughter, a father preserves his own life. Because he doesn't just, you know, she isn't just, you know, taken to the beast's place. She is led there with him. Like, he walks her through the forest as you would down an aisle. And when he leaves her, he's crying and, you know, just like a father's crying as he has to, you know, walk back to his little pew or whatever it is, and and then let the husband have his way, but the hunger fetish always relates to someone having power. So, you know, the beast says, "You're the mistress of this castle. You know, you can have anything you want, but may I can I just watch you eat? Like, could I watch you dine?" And that's you know, that has to strike you as something kind of strange. Why do you want to, you know, most girls today are like, why do you want to watch me eat, you know? And then you have to think, well, would they have been much different back then, too? It's even messier. When was the fork introduced?
In France, Catherine de Médicis in 16th century.
So, what a country girl...
200 years ago.
Even though she had wealth originally, would a country girl really, you know... It would still be a pretty messy affair eating, wouldn't it?
I have no idea.
A beast eating food probably isn't the most graceful.
But he never eats.
He never eats with her. He just watches
her. Because he has to. I mean, if he's a wild boar, I mean, unless you use a straw, right? I mean, I mean, just mechanically, it's pretty difficult.
That's in the Disney story. The whole thing with the fork
eating and like a slug.
To eat his spoon, and he messes it everything, and he disgusts the girl because he has so little manners.
But you learn a lot about somebody from I don't know about manners necessarily, but just what they choose to eat, how they approach their food. You know, like
om nom nom.
Do you eat the stuff you like first, or leave it for last? I mean, there's a lot of behavioral markers in eating. You know?
Yeah, do you eat everything one at a time?
You eat pizza, do you point the slice towards you like an American, or does it not matter which side you go to? Do you fold it over like a New Yorker? What do you do?
Wow, and look, and there's like cultural stuff because I've been eating pizza for 45 years at least now. This is the first time I ever thought of that.
Me too.
In Italy, slices are square. It's kind of more efficient, if you're going to not offer a whole pizza to people, right? They make these big square dishes, so you get a little rectangle anyway. So it's problem solved. But hey, wow, okay.
Just a lot of things are repeated. The word grief is just all over, like the last three pages of the story. Dying of grief, dying of grief, dying of grief. But what does the beast say he's finally going to die of? Hunger.
He's dying of hunger.
He starves himself out of the grief of losing beauty.
Starves himself right next to a lake sitting on the grass when he could just as well drown himself in much less time.
Yeah. True that. There you go.
I mean, seriously, it'd take, 5 minutes? Not, 2 days?
Well, remember, the beast is not very intelligent.
That's true.
Well, that's what it says in the story. He's stupid.
But wait, hunger, isn't hunger love?
Desire. Sex? It's sex.
Yeah, it totally is.
Satisfying a basic, human need.
So the thing is, he never satisfies it because he's the only one in the story that is never eating.
Oh. Celibacy?
Involuntary celibacy.
Is it involuntary?
Now
he's
waiting.
Is he
maybe
in some way actually
to get
the holy man? Okay, I'm going
so
off.
So wow, that's a stretch.
That brought it to a different level right there.
Let's entertain. Okay, so think about this. Beauty isn't just beautiful, right? Her best quality is her compassion and her virtue.
She's smart too.
And she's smart. Mm. So the beast is those things as well. Right. There's he's not beautiful, but he's not smart, but he's a good person. So there's a duality being juxtaposed there between beauty and the beast. But then yet there's the paradox that they have that in common with each other. So if they embody this virtue, one as someone beautiful and one as someone beastly, maybe that is saying something. And that goes back to maybe why miracles, heaven, and God have been mentioned. Maybe there is a connection between physical.
Marriage is highly symbolic.
The physical and the spiritual. There's
sacred
something connected.
Union.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
this fairy.
Union of virtue, so,
is
ugly,
angelic.
Pretty, but the issue of the marriage is about virtue, not about beauty or anything else.
She says, it's clear that I don't love him, but I have respect, friendship, and gratitude for him. So there's no reason to make him miserable, and if I'm ungrateful, I'll reproach myself my entire life. And I know you can't see it, but I'm totally wagging my finger right now.
Yeah. And see, I find that passive and polite and pretty.
Yeah, yeah. And the last sentence of the story is...
condescending.
Okay, So they lived. So she lived with him a long time in perfect happiness because their relationship was founded on virtue.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's 18th century education. I mean, you're doing a great job with all your super ideas, but to me, when I see it in context of 18th century literature, it's just like, as you said, be polite. Do as you're told.
Just accept
and accept your fate and with, a good heart, and maybe you know, not horrible things will happen to you.
I think she goes farther than just accepting it. I think that, I mean, she willingly goes.
Oh, she ends up loving him.
And he only transforms after she does the promise that he's so longed for this entire time.
Right, and let's take that and move into Disney, because that's the obvious similarity, is the fact that in this story, it's not just about marrying, you know, your 14-year-old daughter off to the old, you know, man.
She's 14?
Well, you know,
she's a young maiden.
Hypothetically. She's not 14 in the story, but I'm saying as a
12
lesson.
12 legally in the Middle Ages.
Okay, exactly. So as a, you know, adolescent.
The age of consent.
Yeah, the age of
someone
puberty.
Someone who's hit puberty, yeah,
right,
exactly.
Right, exactly. You know, marrying
no time
your
daughter.
Okay, so besides, you know, that being in context, you know, in this story, what the relation to Disney, obviously, is the fact that the Beast transforms at the end.
Right.
Okay.
And she stays with her father and turns off, you know, like any other guy who's willing to go after her. Obviously, it's Gaston is the primary bad guy. But, I mean, she turns away tons of her own suitors. Even, you know, politely. Like, no, I'm just going to stay with my father. You know, he's old and I want to take care of him. There's a sexual thing going on there, too. Like, oh, you're totally cool with your daughter not getting married, even though that's what she's supposed to do by society standards. She has to convince her other sisters. Or, sorry, she has to convince her father to get marry off her other sisters. No. She doesn't even
in
have
the
that.
Story, but not in,
yeah.
Disney.
Not in Disney.
That's
she's
the
only.
Interesting thing in Disney is, actually, there in Disney, there is this girl, and she's in a complete patriarchal society. She's in between her father, her lover. I mean, she doesn't love him, but he loves her, Gaston, and the Beast, and the people. And the only female characters are the teapot and
those
the armoire.
Girls. Yeah, the
those
armoire.
Three girls.
Oh, the
but
three
the little feathers.
Oh, but they are like they are accessories. They are just there for the songs. They don't do anything.
The feather duster thing. Is
the feather duster.
Oh, the feather duster. Yeah, the feather duster. Yeah,
which
exactly.
Is totally a womanly, you know.
Yeah.
Yay.
Duster. Yeah, but there's two other feather dusters.
So you have the good mother, you know, the teapot, like being, you know, as Disney, like this kind of fairy good mother, godmother. You
like
know, they're always.
Mother Goose of
the
story.
Little
they're always
baby
like
teacup.
Fat and you know, in Disney
pointing
stories.
Pointing her in the right passive direction.
Exactly. So, and then there is the very skinny duster, you know, which is all sexualized. And when she comes
tools,
out,
right?
Yeah, tools of a housewife.
Literally.
Yeah.
the stereotypical
yeah.
French maid.
So there is this girl that basically has to fence for herself into a completely patriarchal world, which is not true in the original stories, you know, Villeneuve and Le Prince de Beaumont, or any of the Beast stories, you know, that happened in the 17th or 16th century in Italy and France. There is always a mother, there is always a queen, you know, there is always at least a helper. And in the Disney movie, we don't even see the fairy at the end, right?
There's
no
fairy.
Fairy.
There is
a
just
bunch of fireworks.
There is
a witch in the beginning.
Very beginning.
Yeah.
That how he became the
in
Beast.
In the pretty stained glass panels.
Which, you know, I mean, I'm glad that they at least explained that in the beginning, because it wasn't in the story that we read.
It was really pretty.
They throw it in at the very end to explain, you know. You
everyone
don't find out until beauty finds out, essentially.
Yeah.
Well, again, because, you know, in the 18th century, you didn't need to rationalize so much those stories. First of all, because they were very well known, you know, because of D'Aulnoy and Murat and Bernard and all those women that wrote, and Perrault, who wrote those stories already in the 17th century, which have been parodied in the 18th century extensively. So basically, the audience that would read a story like that was already aware of those stories. So you don't need to explain that the Beast has been transformed by a fairy at the beginning.
Yeah,
everybody knows that.
Who cares? I mean, it's a Beast. It's obviously not talking about a big pig in clothing. We're talking about a human being. You know, saying that he is...
Or
like
is it?
Beast, you know?
It's
so
a human being.
So people weren't reading it. We don't need a witch. I mean, he is. Who cares,
what's
right?
The word? Anthropomorphic or something.
Anthropomorphic, you project on human characteristics on animal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. So anyway, in the Disney version, you have a sense that it needs to be justified, you know, the fact that he is a Beast. Mm. And that's why this first narrator talk at the beginning of the Disney movie is there, you know, to justify the fact that he is a beast because he was so selfish and mean when he was young that he's been transformed by this fairy because he didn't want to help her when she came at the door disguised as an old
hag,
which she is said, typical.
There again is the rose. She asks for shelter for the night
for the
in return for the rose. And then she enchants that rose after she turns him into a beast so that when the last petal falls,
he stays a beast forever.
He stays a beast forever unless he finds he loves someone and they loves and she
loves him.
Or he, by the way, loves him back.
And that's a good point because Disney takes
the story,
away...
In Disney stories, it has to be a she.
Oh, yeah, there's no... We're not liberated yet.
Allow us to say it. Gives credit, you know? Let's give credit. I like to... You know, I'm so always full of hate against everybody, you know? I like to, when I have that like slight opportunity to give some good credit. I mean, Disney is actually... one of the, if not the most, certainly major kind of gay-friendly corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And let's give them, you know, credit. They get boycotted by fundamentalists on a regular basis, and they don't care. You know, couples get insurance, health insurance at Disney. It's pretty rare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, change the fact that in the story it has to be a she.
Let's not get excited. Also, cutting wages for the worker.
Gay days. It's always a fun time to go.
Yes, they still haven't done a fairy tale with gay people or pro-gay. And
the comics are starting the gays. I would say
they have yet to make a princess with a non-white person too. And yes,
no, they
know.
Did.
Yeah,
they did.
Yeah, but for real, I mean, for real.
Maybe Princess with Princess and the Frog.
Let's not start on that.
I mean, you know.
The whole voodoo thing, kind of.
And Mulan, which we talked about last
week.
We
need a show like about racism and Disney, like co-host. Yeah.
We'd have a year-long show.
They did tackle gender identity with Mulan.
Yes,
but I mean, again, they're taking sources from the past. It's not like they have a gay fairy tale right to choose from necessarily.
We don't have a Spanish Disney princess yet.
No.
That's their next thing.
Wait a second. There's
Jasmine. What? She's like Arabic sort of.
Yeah, there is Jasmine.
Well, that's one of the things. They're all like, you know, that's actually one of the things that there's a lot of studies of this. That today, in some sense, this is highly reductive. Sorry, you know, but generally, we've over just immediately judging people based on their skin color, or some of us. But very few of us are getting over real cultural differences. So it's if you're an Arab, so long as you behave like a Southern Californian. You know? It's okay if you're black, so long as you behave like a middle-class white person, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We see that that's actually how the racism kind of shifted off and in some ways became even more insidious because it's more hidden.
More personal.
Yeah, there's more of like a qualifier as opposed to a quantifier.
Yeah.
In determining the differences.
And women are highly confused that way, of course, also.
That's confused little women.
Like a man.
Oh,
we expect to behave like a man, like a woman, and like a lot of other things, and we don't like any other roles. I mean, there's a lot of these dual messages, which...
And you still have to be pretty, polite.
Oh, yeah.
You just want to have your cake
you
and eat it,
don't
too.
Need to... You cannot be passive anymore.
Devour that cake.
Oh, wait a minute.
I don't know. I find a lot of men say they want a smart girl, but the second she outsmarts him, she's
the second
the
she opens her mouth, it's too much. It's too late, you know? Like...
You just hang out with the wrong guys.
Yeah.
Exactly. Maybe it's a generational thing.
I think so, too.
Exactly. You know, I have to question that because every time I hear these complaints, it seems to me like they are... seeing or meeting the wrong guys.
Nothing's sexier than a smart girl. And if you know and girls out there, you know, I'm not saying nothing's more respectable or interesting or noble. Sexier.
Thank you, my husband.
Seriously. No, I mean, come on. I mean, girls out there of all ages, I mean, if you even have an inkling of beginning to think that, oh, I might be too strong for him, I should weaken myself or passive myself or anything like that, that's it. Right there.
Yeah.
It's over.
That's one thing that got me... I just laughed in the story she was saying... Or she was saying... The author was saying, like, the sisters have their husbands, and, you know, one's way too handsome, mm-hmm. and he despises how pretty she is, and the other uses his intelligence to enrage others. none more importantly than his own wife. And I just thought, well, intelligence is such a great attribute, but okay. Not that that's an internal thing, too, but... know.
Yeah, it's just because they are both full of themselves.
Yeah.
Coming back to Disney, yes. Can we talk about...
They changed the magic items, you know?
First of all, they added this interdiction, which is not in the original
Induction.
Story. She's
Interduction.
No,
interdiction.
Interdiction.
Interdiction. Like, you know, interdiction, this prohibition.
Oh, okay.
Of going, you know, to a place, which definitely is a motif coming from different tales. I mean, still on the same theme, you know, like Bluebeard, for example, has that theme. So, and it's also a beast, Beauty and the Beast story. So, but anyway, so they added this interdiction. Why did they add it exactly? I don't know, but I think because I mean, it doesn't even. I mean, it just scares the girl. Okay, so they added it, I guess. So she's scared, so she goes away, so he can come in the forest and save her from the wolves. And then he can be injured. And then she can be his nurse. And by being his nurse, she starts loving him. Okay, well, you know, there are many other ways in the story why, in the original stories, why he would love her. So why this interdiction? And especially... What is it about this West Wing? Why is it not the North Wing, the South Wing, the East? Why is it the West Wing? Because the only West Wing we know about is in the White House. Right, so what is... Anybody has an idea? Why is it the West Wing?
Well, the interdiction thing, I think that was just put in there to I don't know, make it sound more like, oh, she was less coerced into it, and she just it grew on her, you know? She had time to think about it. They were made equals, like the Jane Eyre and Rochester thing. Oh, he's blind, so she takes care of him. They become equals. Like, I think that's
what
it's about.
Yeah, because it weakened the strength of the beast by being wounded. And then, again, going back to what you said about the West Wing, I mean, this totally relates to what you were saying, Benny, about, you know, the relation to Genesis and, you know, the factor of curiosity and knowledge. Well, if, as Americans, we understand the West Wing, I mean, those words have power. That's where the decisions of our country are made. I mean, that's a definite block on
is
knowledge
Disney,
toward women.
Ooh. Is Disney saying that basically... You know, the fact that we cannot enter the West Wing is that because we don't have any process in the decision making?
Never.
Is that why it's prohibited?
Yeah.
Huh.
Still
not
a woman
cool.
president.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, why the West Wing? You
insidious,
know,
radical political message and
it's
Disney
in none of any... I've never, you know, for the hundreds and hundreds of stories that I've read, there's never a West Wing. There is a corridor, there is a hall, there is a tower, there is a...
little tiny room at the
ditch,
end of the hall.
There is a bed chamber, there is an anti-bed chamber, but a West Wing? No. So, it's gotta be something.
Gotta be something.
Yeah.
He's barring her from civilization, because, you know, you think West and East, like East being Orientalism and, you know, that sort of foreign erotic. It's the opposite of that. He's barring her from
the West civilization, from
something like.
So he wants to keep her stupid.
I also make a connection on the Wicked Witch of the West too. I mean, think about that West being like the side of evil and East being the side of dawn. I mean, that's also a correlation.
Now, wait a
that's
minute.
Been
Isn't it North and South are the good witches and East and West are the bad witches?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Sure is.
Oh, is that okay? Yep. Glinda's from
East
the north.
Is bad,
okay.
Yeah.
West is
okay.
Good.
Okay.
Of course, you can view things from the point of view of the Wicked
the
Witch
wicked,
too.
Wicked, yeah, I love that.
Oh, killed her sister.
Well,
comes
regardless,
into her castle, takes over her stuff. You know, messes
regardless,
with her
the
monkeys.
Sun sets in the west and it rises in the east. So a sun setting and it's bringing night. You're thinking of darkness. I mean, that could be another obvious connection. But I love what you're saying about the West Wing and. Gosh, Disney really took a liberty on that one.
Yeah, prohibiting women from the West Wing. How interesting. When was it made? 1995, I think, right? Or 1998?
I thought it was like 89.
89?
I thought, or
no.
Was it 92?
No, it was in 90-something for sure.
Yeah, we have to go now. So we leave you with those good thoughts and
so
a challenge.
Much. Yes. Mm-hmm.
What challenge?
Do
you have an idea, Talia?
Someone dear to the main character, Beauty, Belle.
So we have a beauty.
The heck you want to call her?
So we have a beautiful girl.
Yes, and someone close to her. Doesn't matter if it's her brother, her father, her mother, her sister.
Yeah, go on. What we need three things. So just three words. A beautiful girl
is threatened by a beast. A beast threatened. A humanoid beast.
Threatened by a beast. No, they can choose if it's a humanoid or not. It can just
okay.
be.
Okay, and then
a beast.
And so she takes their place and learns to.
No, that's too much.
Okay,
just
so the beast falls in love with her, wants to marry her. She doesn't want to marry him. And then the third point of the story is
the West Wing.
The West Wing and
the West Wing.
The West Wing must be an incorporated motif. And the third point is that she falls in love with the beast after all.
No, why?
No?
No. She doesn't have to. She's just a beautiful girl threatened by a beast, and there is a West Wing.
Okay, sounds great. Okay, so to all the fans, go ahead and take that skeleton and see what you can come up with. Thanks for tuning in today for Secrets of the Fairies with Dr. Charlotte Trunke and others. Every Wednesday.
Juliana,
yeah, thank you, Juliana,
guest.
Talia,
thank you for having
and
me.
Benny, of course, Jesse as well. We will see you next Wednesday from 9 to 10, Secrets of the Fairies, 91.5 WPRK, Winter Park, Florida. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
The preceding program did not reflect the views or opinions of the station, its management, or employees.
WPRK, Winter Park, Florida. I am John Lydon here of Public Image Limited. You may also know me as Rotten, and I may know you as W. WPRK, Winter Park, Florida. I am John Lydon here of Public Image Limited. You may also know me as Rotten, and I may know you as W.
This is Ralph Nader. You should listen to WPRK. It's the voice of the students. It'll give you a bigger framework.